The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Over the line, Orr throws it. He's in. A backhander and a save by Tony Esposito.
Stan Mikita was a small guy, very cocky in those days.
A right hand by Magnuson, and he puts Van Dyke down.
Magnuson trying to tear his hair out.
NBC Chicago's James Neveau.
Murphy picked out of midair.
Odyssey Chicago Hockey Insider Jay Zawoski.
No more! Hawks win again! Chris Chelios in overtime!
Part of Blue Wire Podcast.
Came off the boards, he shoots, he's gone! Down to the Tanes! A game-winning goal! The Hawks live to fight another day!
Falling back, circle and drive, skipped it from
the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Chicago's going to be in last place forever.
Clear to center for Tanes, he got a breakaway!
Triple Threat Sports, Fry the Coop, and by the Since In-Law Group. Let's drop the puck.
Welcome in, friends. This is indeed the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. My name is James Neveau from NBC5, and with me as always is the one and only Jay Zawoski of Odyssey, of WBBM, of the I'm Fat Podcast. Jay, it was an interesting game tonight on TNT. Looked like the Blackhawks had it well in hand. The Detroit Red Wings felt otherwise and ended up being a Blackhawks win, but boy howdy, it was not easy. As not easy as it can be when you score 8 goals in a game.
Yeah, as uneasy as I felt in an 8-goal performance probably in my entire life. But thanks for tuning in. Make sure you're following us on social media at Madhouse Pod on Twitter, Madhouse _ Pod on Instagram, and Madhouse Hockey Pod on Facebook. We've got our Tee Public Shop. There's a sale going on there through Sunday. $13 classic tees, up to 35% off everything else in the shop. Use that link in our bio, please, so we get credit for the sale. That's very important. But yeah, check out our Tee Public sale. You'll enjoy that. We've got our Patreon page, all kinds of stuff. So hit that link in our bio. It's got everything you need, Madhouse Podcast. But let's get right into it. Hawks beat the Red Wings 8-5. Also, before the game, send out a long email detailing their new general manager search. The search begins tomorrow. They'll start interviewing candidates. The second half of this show will be our reaction to that news, so make sure you stick around for this whole thing. But let's start with the Blackhawks win in Detroit. And James, you sort of said it, and the game had it felt like several different games at once. The game started terribly for the Hawks, right? It was all Detroit early on. Marc-Andre Fleury came up big. Then you blink and the Hawks are up 4-0. First period ends. Detroit scores, what was it, 2 in the third in the second period? It's like it was just a back and forth game all night long. And when the smoke cleared, the Hawks won 8-5. But man, that never felt comfortable. No, that's a lie. It felt comfortable at 4-0. After that, as soon as Detroit got back in it, I never felt like it was in hand. It was until Hagel scored that goal. I was like, ugh, this is going to be a tight one and a scary one, and it was.
Yeah, sure as hell didn't feel comfortable when the Red Wings came back and scored 3 goals in the second period. That was a very nerve-wracking few moments there for the Blackhawks after P.S. Suter ended up bringing the game within a goal with 13 seconds left, was assisted by Jordan Oesterle. So all the former Blackhawks getting involved in that one.
All the legends.
Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat end up scoring goals to get the lead back up to 3. Then Moritz Seider and Dylan Larkin both score, and it's a 1-goal game again with 5 minutes. Just an absolutely freaking crazy game between two of the worst teams in the NHL, I think it would probably be fair to say. But the Blackhawks do end up coming out on top. And hey, look at it this way, Jay. The Blackhawks last 2 games, they've averaged 4 goals. That's good, right?
Yeah. I was like, what? Oh, yes. Yeah, there you go. 4 goal average. That'll get it done.
He picked up what I was throwing down after the Colorado shootout.
Well, let's start with this game with Dylan Strome, because it's a guy who's had a couple tumultuous seasons in a row after a very promising beginning to his start in Chicago. I think if you ask a lot of people, you know, when this season began, would Dylan Strome be a Blackhawk on January 26th? Most people would have said no, but a 4-point performance, really strong game. He's had a string of some pretty solid games, and It's weird to say, like, maybe Dylan Strome's figuring it out. But we forget how young he is, right? He's still a very young NHL player. And one guy we got to see very recently, Ryan Hartman, is sort of proof positive that it doesn't happen overnight for everybody. Success is not always instant for top prospects. And look, I'm not ready to say that Dylan Strome is going to be the next big thing or anything like that, but we're seeing some good signs from him. We're seeing him get the message. And aside from the absolute snipe, his second goal of the game, everything was kind of done in front of the net. Even the assist on Sam Lafferty's goal was him working hard to get in front of the net, didn't stop crashing net, and made that pass right out in front to Lafferty. And that was a nice play, his assist and his four-point night. So big thumbs up for Dylan Strome for not just sort of – look, I think a lot of people – if they had the sort of season Strome has had and had coaches saying things about him in the public, both Colleton and King have said and been critical of him in the press, maybe not like in a mean way, but just said, you know, we need a little more from him. And he's responded well, and it's good to see him get rewarded for his recent string of really good play, and couldn't be happy for him. He seems like a really great dude, so happy to see him get rewarded. So to me, that's what I'm going to take away here is Dylan Strome's four-point night in a game where he probably could have had, five, six, 7 points. He was all over the place.
Good Lord, yeah. He could have easily had a Sam Gagne type game. Like you said, was all over the ice, was certainly, you know, worthy of getting the hat trick. Hockey karma was certainly kind to him in this game. We had to hear the juggling story again, how he took up juggling in the offseason, and it somehow magically created this amazing face-off taker. Maybe Kirby Dach is trying that. He won half of his draws tonight. But
hey, that's big, just, man. That's huge.
I'll take that from Kirby Dach, and it wasn't like he took two draws. He took 12.
Yeah.
So I will definitely take that. But I think that it's been interesting watching Strome lately. I pointed this out on Twitter. He did only have one goal in his last 9 games heading into tonight, which, I mean, basically throw a dart at a Blackhawk right now. You're going to hit a guy who's in a scoring slump like that. But he did have points in more than half of those, right? So it's not like he's been a complete non-entity. He's had some really solid games lately. He looked really good in one game against the Wild when the Blackhawks just got shellacked. Yeah. He did have 4 shots on goal, and he did have the lone tally in that game. Didn't have any shots against Minnesota the following night, but I think most of the time lately, Strome has looked like a guy who could potentially get some things going offensively and maybe help this team out a little bit. And tonight was kind of a culmination of that, I felt like, for him. I thought that he had a really strong game, was really engaged in a lot of different areas. And, I mean, credit where it's due. The guy did score a hat trick and had 6 shots on goal tonight. And both of those were very clearly indicative of just how well he's been playing. And I know a lot of people were kind of making jokes during the game that this was just like trade bait Dylan Strome. He's trying like hell to get out of Chicago. Whatever the case is, he has been playing better lately. I do have to give him credit for that.
Well, and it's always been a question of consistency with Strome, right? You'll see those 2 or 3 games where he is a definite difference maker, and then you'll go a week and you won't even notice him on the ice. And I think that, to me, seems to be the recurring theme with the coaching criticism. It's not like this guy sucks or he's a candy ass or whatever you want to say. It's just that he's a different guy every night, and coaches don't like that. They can't rely on that. They want to know what they're going to get from their players. Like, you know, I think you look at – if you go up and down the roster, you could probably say, like, okay, you know, Hagel is going to give you a bunch of grit, a bunch of hustle, and he's going to score every now and again. Mackenzie Entwistle is going to make the smart play. Not the biggest offensive juggernaut, but a guy you can rely on, right? You can go up and down, and sort of say, this is what I can expect from this guy on a game-to-game basis. For a long time, Dylan Strome was not that guy. And the longer he can keep this going, the more trade value he has, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, just maybe, he tempts whoever this new Blackhawks GM is to hang on to him and give him another year, give him another look and see, you know, what the true Dylan Strome is going to be. Is he going to continue his career being this sort of up and down, you know, hat trick and then no points for a week kind of a guy? Or is he someone who's going to consistently put points up and be, you know, a 55, 60 point guy for the rest of his career? Because to me, if you can hang on to a guy like that and you believe that Strome will be that kind of a player, I find that hard to pass up on when you look at how bare the Blackhawks cupboard is. And look, if a team's not going to give you a first or second round pick, chances are a third, a fourth, or fifth is not going to pan out to be as good as Dylan Strome. So you need to start thinking about return on investment versus, you know, maybe taking a bet on a guy who's got a decent attitude and has seemed to figure things out lately.
Yeah, I think that you hit on some really good points there. I think that based on his contract situation and based on what the Blackhawks are probably going to be looking to build towards in the future, I don't think that they're probably going to be looking at Dylan Strome as a guy that is someone that they anticipate being here when their next competitive window opens. Of course, that's going to be completely up to the leadership team, whether it's new or existing, and we'll talk about that more in the back half of this podcast. But I think that we've seen these kind of flashes from Dylan Strome before, right? Where it looks like he's kind of started to engage more. He's kind of flipped the switch, so to speak, and then he'll go for a stretch without doing much of anything. I think that this season we've seen a few examples of that. I think back to November where I think he went through a stretch where he had five shots on goal in five games, just a completely listless performance, was not exactly earning the trust of Jeremy Colliton. And then he had a similar spell later in the season with Derek King too. I feel like Strome runs so hot and cold that it's really hard to rely on him sometimes as kind of a consistent goal scorer on a team that's kind of lacking in those types of players. And then there's nights like tonight where you're just like, why can't you just do this all the time?
Yeah,
man.
Why can't you score four points every night, Dylan?
Like, well, just like to have that no, type of impact on the game, though. Like, right. You want him to be a top six winger or a top six center each and every night, and he could be, and it just, there's a reason that it's not happening, and I'm trying to figure out what it is, and I just can't. It's really frustrating, like, especially when you have a night like this where you can see those skills on full display.
You mentioned his contract, just so everybody knows. He is signed only through this year, $3 million deal. This summer, he becomes a restricted free agent with arbitration rights. So we'll see. I can't imagine, unless he suddenly catches fire and does become this guy every night, a huge raise for him. It's going to be interesting. I don't know. Let's place your bets here, James. March 21st, the trade deadline, is Dylan Strome still a Hawk?
I'm going to say no. I think that he's going to attract some interest. I don't know if it's not going to be some massive package, of course. Maybe like a mid-round pick, maybe a prospect involved there, but I'm sure that teams are going to kind of look at Dylan Strome the same way that I do and that you do to a large degree, where he's just kind of a streaky player that has these great moments and someone's going to think they can catch lightning in a bottle. But I get the sense that he's going to get moved to a contending team that's looking to add some depth and some potential scoring punch at a relatively low cost, and I think he's probably going to end up getting moved.
I agree. I think you're totally correct on your prediction. That's exactly what will happen. Not that they're similar players, but the way the Blackhawks got Antoine Vermette, you know, that kind of a late season reinforcement sort of a deal, you know, to admit that's your third line center and a guy who on a lesser team would be much higher. Whatever happens with him, I wish him the best. I was just pleased to see him have a night like this. I'm sure it's a huge weight off his shoulders to, you know, really feel good when the final horn sounds after a long couple of years for Dylan Strome. So
yeah, that would have sucked if they had lost the game.
Yeah,
imagine.
Seriously.
the hat trick would have kind of got lost in the wash there.
Definitely. Okay. I don't know how deeply you've looked at the box score. Do you see who was plus five in this game?
Was it Erik Gustafsson?
It was Caleb Jones.
It was a joke, by the way. Erik Gustafsson played like 8 minutes tonight.
That's fine.
That's, you know what? Like, somebody pointed out on Twitter that Caleb Jones has been having some really solid games lately. I agree. Am I the only, are we the only two people seeing that, or is that something you've observed too?
I would like him to stay in the lineup consistently. You got to see what you have there. I agree. I've been more pleased than disappointed in his play. The goal he set up, the DeBrincat first goal, taking the puck away from Tyler Bertuzzi, fending off COVID, taking the puck away, getting it to DeBrincat, to Taves, back to DeBrincat. He had a strong game, and I think keeping him in the lineup is a good thing. These guys need to find a rhythm, and he's sort of been in and out, in and out. Now with some injuries, he's going to be forced to be in. But I like what he's brought overall. Like, for your fifth or sixth defenseman, I think I have no complaints about Caleb Jones. He's not going to set the world on fire, but you didn't expect him to be a top four when you brought him in here. You hoped that he would be an anchor on your bottom pair. That's exactly what he's been, and he's shown, you know, he's shown some ability to hang out and create some offense while defending decently. So I'm very pleased with the Caleb Jones acquisition.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up his advanced metrics tonight just to see what they look like in comparison to the plus five, dead even in Corsi, 50% tonight, which I kind of find amusing. But a lot of the Blackhawks were right in that area. In fact, the Blackhawks didn't have anybody below 42% and nobody above 58%, which kind of indicative of kind of the ebb and flow of this game, I feel like. But yeah, I think that Caleb Jones has really solidified himself as that, you know, fifth defenseman. I think he can fill in as a fourth defenseman in a pinch. But in a season where we're really starting to want to see some younger guys play and to get more run and see what we've got for the future, Caleb Jones is definitely a guy that I do want to see more of. And I do see a lot to his game that I like. I think he's a decent defensive player. He's got a little bit of offensive upside here and there, but it was a guy that I didn't really think too much of when they acquired him in the trade, but I'm starting to see it a little bit. And that's been kind of in short supply with some of the Blackhawks' younger defensemen this season. So I'm essentially at a point where I'm going to take what I can get.
Speaking of people we underestimated at the trade, I got to admit, I was way wrong on Sam Lafferty.
I've really
liked his game. And yes, he is a physical role play type guy. Not a ton of offensive upside, but got his first goal as a Hawk in this game. And I think actually this game, he was probably the least noticeable he's been in some time. But,
which is funny because he scored his first goal tonight.
Right, but he has had some chemistry on that top line and just does the little things right. You want to talk about the anti-Alex Nylander? It is Sam Lafferty.
they are polar opposite
players where you look at Nylander and say, oh my God, look at the skill set, put it on display, where Lafferty is getting it done with, you know, just pretty much grit and want to. And which player would you rather have? I think the answer is definitely Sam Lafferty. So I want to give props to him. And you mentioned the Corsi ratings in this game. Seth Jones, the team low, 41.86. I thought in the first period, Seth Jones was an absolute monster. Breaking up passes, setting up goals. There was one pass breakup he made from his knees, then got up and went and took the puck from Dylan Larkin to set up, whose goal was that one? I forget which one it was, but there were eight. It's hard to keep track of all of them. but he got, I think it was the first, oh yeah, it was a Strom goal. He got that thing going, the first Strom goal from two defensive plays in the same shift, in the same sequence. I thought he was great. Two assists. And I know, like, every time he plays, it's just so polarized still with Hawks fans.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how you can actively watch Hawks games and complain about Seth Jones.
Yeah, the penalty he got called for tonight, I know, kind of irritated him, and that may have kind of led to a little bit of a decline in the numbers as the Red Wings started to kind of push later in the game. But, I mean, you look at his stat line tonight. You look at two assists. You look at four shots on goal. You look at 24 minutes and 44 seconds of ice time playing in all situations. What else do you want Seth Jones to do? I think he's been a really strong addition to the Blackhawks. I think he's their clear number one defenseman, of course.
Oh, God,
that's exactly what you're paying him to do. Like, I'm not sure what more you could possibly want from him. Like, yeah, there's instances where he'll still make a bad read here and there, but so does everybody else. Like, I think that too often we've been guilty at times, and I say we meaning Blackhawk fans in general, not specifically you and I. Sometimes I think we maybe go over his performances with a little too fine tooth of a comb, perhaps. But I think that, I mean, you can throw all the, you know, advanced metrics at me that you want, and I'm sure they're floating out there that show that Seth Jones sucks and Adam Boqvist is God, whatever you want to end up citing. But I thought that you had phrased it really well at one point on this podcast when you said it's game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals. It is the last shift of the game. You need a defenseman on the ice. Who do you want, Seth Jones or Adam Boqvist? I mean, the answer to me is extremely obvious. It's Seth Jones. And I feel like he, as time goes on, he's probably going to get appreciated more. And as we've said before, the contract's going to look better and better as the cap goes up and other guys start to get paid. I think that Seth Jones, with the exception of maybe a little bit of a sluggish start, I've been perfect. I've been satisfied with what he's done this season.
I think early in the season, we definitely saw him actively trying to justify his contract, right? He was trying to do everything. He was trying to reinvent the game. He was trying to prove to everybody that I'm worth this and I'm not the guy that I was last year in Columbus. As soon as he started just playing his game again, everything got the way it should be, right? Everything started to look like you thought it would look. And look, Seth Jones plays on a very porous defensive team. He plays half the game. Like, his numbers are going to be impacted by who he's on the ice with, all the situations he plays in, yada, yada, yada. And it sounds like it's excuse making, and it is a little bit. But the only thing when I watch Seth Jones play and I go, ooh, that's not great, is the advanced stats at the end of the game. Nothing that I'm watching during a game, nothing I'm observing from Seth Jones, save from the occasional giveaway that, again, every defenseman's going to have. Seth Jones is as solid as they come. And I'm glad he's a Hawk. Yes, he's overpaid, probably by $1 million. Yes, they gave up too much to get him. But the fact remains, he's probably the best player on the team right now. It's him or DeBrincat. And it's,
I was going to say I'd probably side with Alex DeBrincat, but I see what you're saying.
Well, let's talk about him now. 25th. I was going
to
say,
can we
goals.
Do a really quick shout out to, we were, since we were doing game shout outs, we can definitely get to DeBrincat next, but do want to shout out Brandon Hagel. I know you've mocked Jonathan Toews a lot for the palms up. What the heck did I do? face.
It's on the bingo card.
It's literally like the middle space on the bingo card, but I wanted to shout out Hagel, who clearly got interfered with in the third period of tonight's game.
Yes.
Was fuming pissed, and then immediately went and scored a goal. Like, that's how you react to a freaking setback, bro. Don't, you complain about the penalty, but you go score a goal, and you're in good shape. Like, I loved that.
Yeah, that great response. That's just the kind of player he is, man. It's so good to see him getting rewarded, too, with points. And I think after last season, all of us were kind of like, okay, that was really encouraging and unexpected. Was that real? Is that really who Brandon Hagel is? And he has not missed a beat this season. He's been the same guy. He's got 11 goals now, 2 points on the night tonight, a plus two, 4 shots on goal, another shot attempt. It's just another Brandon Hagel night. And he's become one of the more dependable players on the team. It's just, you know, I know we're throwing bouquets in this game because we probably shouldn't be, because it was kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, we're throwing bouquets at individuals, not the team itself.
But we have to, right, and I think, look, the reality is, and I said it a few minutes ago, this team is not very good. They're not good defensively. They struggle.
I said they were one of the worst teams in the NHL, yes, and I stand by that.
But we have to judge each game through that lens, right? We can't compare them to the 2013 Blackhawks. Because there's
well, we
no
could you wouldn't like the results of that
right.
very much.
There's no point in doing that because it's just not who they are. So on a game to game basis, you know, when things look good, an 8-5 win on the road against a team that's not great but getting better, I'm pleased. You know, I'm happy they got away with a win. And even though it doesn't feel like a 3-goal win, it's a 3-goal win, and that was entertaining as hell, man. What did you think of the TNT broadcast?
The TNT broadcast, I thought the studio show, you can still see where they're kind of trying to, get the personality of the guys out there a little bit more. I'm sure you saw the Gretzky goat thing that they were doing tonight and some of the interviews that they did during the intermission. I really, by the way, enjoyed the Steve Yzerman interview where the Blackhawks were pasting the Red Wings and then they still had to talk to Steve Yzerman.
Well, I want to know what did Steve Yzerman, when they asked him what he does to unwind, he's like, I probably shouldn't say so because this is like a national broadcast. Is he like smoking meth? Is he
secret pothead? Is what he is.
Is he like it like strip clubs? What is Steve Yzerman doing to blow off steam?
Just randomly today, I saw a story about a guy being arrested for having a meth fueled attack squirrel. So it's so weird that meth has now come up multiple times in my life today.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you though on the broadcast. Like they're trying to get that chemistry. And I think it's coming. Like, I have not watched every TNT broadcast, so it's probably been 2 or 3 weeks since I, like, actually settled in to watch a game. And you can see it growing. The guys are starting to know each other, starting to trust each other. Weird that Gretzky wouldn't be there on the broadcast on his birthday where they're, like, just throwing roses at him the entire time.
What? He was absent for quite a while, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then he, like, briefly came back, and now he's gone again?
Yeah, Keith Jones sort of mentioned it too. Like, all right, I think we've talked enough about Wayne today. Like,
yeah,
it's enough. Like, we don't have to spend the entire
broadcast.
Like,
don't talk about the guy who's not here.
Yeah, it was weird. Happy birthday, Wayne Gretzky. And by the way, I can verify Keith Jones's story that Wayne Gretzky signs his emails with 99 when the Cubs drafted his son. I remember his name. I want to say Brent, but Brent was his brother.
Trevor Gretzky.
Trevor Gretzky. Thank you.
It was Trevor.
When the Cubs drafted him, Wayne agreed to come on the score, and I got to book him, and sure enough, he sent an email back, hey, thanks, that was a lot of fun, signature 99. Like, hell yes, that's awesome. How I didn't print that email, I'll never understand. I don't know if I still have it, but better
sign off what Wayne Gretzky does with 99 or the way Joe Maddon used to send his text messages to you.
Yeah, Wayne, for sure. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Didn't Joe always, like, just give you some variation of okay?
Yeah, there was always some okie dokie or thumbs up or cool. There was always some kind of fun affirmation, you know, of ready to go?
Yeah.
Si, senor. Stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. It was different every week. But by the way, I should say you brought it up. Joe Maddon, genuine. Like, that's the real dude. The guy that he portrays to be when you see him in interviews and on TV. That's how he is, like, when the cameras are off, too. So
I get super Bill Walton vibes from him. I really do.
Similar, but maybe not as exhausting. I think after a while with Bill Walton, you'd be like, okay, I need a break. I think with Joe, it's not that way. He's just kind of a chill. He's more of like a Jimmy Buffett than a Bill Walton.
I can accept that. Okay. And I like that.
You know what I like?
Ooh,
James
Naveau. What do you like?
Fry the Coop.
Oh, hell yeah. I love where this is going.
The best Nashville hot chicken you've ever damn had. I had Nashville hot chicken from another establishment tonight. And
cheating. He's cheating.
Not the same. I'm going to be honest. I said, you know what this could be? Fry the Coop. And you know what it's not? Fry the Coop. So guess what I'm going to have tomorrow? Fry the Coop.
I'm betting Fry the Coop.
Yeah. Go to their website, frythecoop.com. If you're in the Chicagoland area, and I'm betting if you're listening to this Blackhawks podcast, you are, you've got one near you. Oaklawn, Elmhurst, Westtown, Prospect Heights, Tinley Park, and coming soon to Darien. So the Western Burbs are about to get their own Fry the Coop, so that's awesome. Go to frythecoop.com, check out their menu, place your order, go dine in, whatever you want to do. You're going to love it. That's a Madhouse podcast guarantee. Before we get to the second half of the show and all the general manager news, I sort of want to one more thing about the TNT broadcast. I'm watching with Hope, and she's sort of half watching, and Yzerman's on there. She's like, who is that? I'm like, that's Steve Yzerman. She's like, no. I'm like, yes, that's Steve Yzerman. She goes, when did he get hot?
I'm like, what?
I don't know. I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, was he not when he played? She's like, no, he was not when he played. I'm like, okay, I didn't know this. But apparently, you know, Cougar bait, Steve Yzerman. That's called my wife a cougar. That's not going to go
well. Speaking of cougar bait, did you discuss with her Ryan Poles? Does she have a thought on the Bears' new GM?
She does not. No, she does
okay.
not. Yeah,
I'm always interested to see because her opinions tend to, I don't know, go against what I would think she would say. It's very interesting to hear that. It's like hearing Addie's thoughts on hockey jerseys.
Yeah. Well, we know Hope has terrible taste in men. This has been proven for a long, long time.
I'm letting that sit there. I ain't saying nothing.
Well, we've got a mountain of evidence proving it. All right. When we come back, we're going to get into the news of the day, the off-ice news of the day. The Blackhawks general manager search is beginning. We'll fill you in on all the details next on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by the Simpson Law Group. After over a decade of prosecuting homicide cases as an assistant Cook County State's attorney, Kent Simpson opened his own firm over 20 years ago, specializing in all forms of personal injury cases, including injuries as a result of accidents, including cars, trucks, motorcycles, bicycles, boats, planes, and buses, construction accidents, nursing home abuse, medical negligence and birth injuries, slip and fall cases, and injuries as a result of hazardous drugs or products. Kent's firm's results speak for themselves, with millions recovered for their clients. Simpson Law Group charges no fees unless they win for you. So call for a free consultation, 312-332-2107, or visit SimpsonLawGroup.com. That's S-I-N-S-O-N LawGroup.com. Don't go off sides. Go top shelf. Call now, 312-332-2107.
Welcome back into the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. We spent the first portion of this show talking about the dramatic victory over the Detroit Red Wings on Wednesday night, and now we get to go big picture. Yay. Dramatic music. We have been talking so much on this podcast about what the Blackhawks are going to end up doing in their hockey operations department, whether they're going to keep Kyle Davidson, whether they're going to hire a president of hockey ops, if they're going to bring in Edzo as hockey czar, whatever it is. We've talked about it extensively. And guess what we got today, Mr. Jay Zawoski? We got an update. An update from the desk of Blackhawks chief executive officer Danny Wirtz. Wrote a letter to fans, made a lot of promises and a lot of statements about where that process is. And guess what, Jay? I'm going to make you read the entire damn thing. Good luck.
All right. Nobody wants this, so I'm going to read very slowly, as I am typically a mush-mouth bastard. So I'm going to do this as carefully as I can. All right? As James said, from the desk of Chicago Blackhawks chief executive officer Danny Wirtz. All of this is a quote. As we read, that was not part of it.
You okay. Immediately stopped yourself. You made it two friggin' words into reading this and just stopped.
Okay. From here on out, this is a quote. As we recently reached the halfway point of the 2021-22 season, I'm excited to provide an update on our search for the next general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks. Over the last 6 weeks, our leadership has been taking part in a discovery and research process that explored all functions and structure of our hockey operations department. This top-to-bottom exercise revealed an incredible amount of in-house talent while also highlighting areas for growth and opportunities to become more competitive. We plan to create a next-generation hockey operations department with a path to sustained success for the Chicago Blackhawks. Our next step is to find the right leader, and we will begin to reach out to potential candidates this week to interview for the general manager role. That position will be the highest ranking executive in hockey operations and will report directly to me. We anticipate making a final decision in advance of the NHL trade deadline, March 21st. We're looking to hire the best strategic mind who can build and develop a hockey operations leadership team that will be best in class across professional sports. This new leader will create a team environment that brings the best experts together to guide decision-making on the future of the Blackhawks while ensuring they share in the overall organizational goals of consistently competing at a championship level. And without question, he or she must be someone who exhibits our organizational values. Current interim GM Kyle Davidson is a candidate and will interview for the GM role. He remains in his position of interim GM and will continue to have full autonomy of hockey decisions in the meantime. I will lead the interview process alongside President of Business Operations Jamie Faulkner with the support and counsel of an advisory group who will offer perspective on the role and those being interviewed. That advisory committee will be comprised of leaders across the sports industry as well as our search partners and will be announced in the coming days. We will be as transparent as possible throughout the process. However, since we will be interviewing candidates both inside and outside of hockey, we will need to respect the confidentiality of the process and those candidates. In addition, we are planning on hosting a town hall style meeting next week with our fans, partners, staff, and media to further explain the greater vision of the Chicago Blackhawks. Details on that are to follow. We greatly look forward to bringing in the leader of our club's team operations who is going to help write the next chapter of championship hockey for this franchise. So there you have it. There is the statement from Danny Wirtz. A lot of places to start, James. I will take a sip of water and let you pick where to start.
I think the first thing that – let's just start at the top. The fact that they have been looking through a discovery and research process to kind of figure out a structure of hockey ops, and the fact that they've identified a lot of in-house talent that they want to keep, I thought was all very interesting. And then it ultimately – comes down to the general manager role being the highest ranking executive in hockey ops, which means no president of hockey operations. It strictly means a GM and then everyone below them. That GM will report directly to Danny Wirtz, which I keep being tickled by this. The fact that there was all this talk about how he was wanting to get back into the beverage distribution business and he wanted to kind of focus on that. It does not sound like he is ever like going anywhere. Like he is fully invested in working with the Blackhawks and doing what needs to be done on that side of things. And I found it fascinating that they've kind of dispensed with the idea of having a president of hockey ops and then a GM below that. It sounds like they're going to go with a slightly more streamlined structure. And I definitely thought that that was kind of a fascinating development.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. I definitely thought we would be seeing a, you know, czar of hockey operations and then a GM under that person. And my first thought was if they're going, let's be honest, the same way the Bears are going, right?
Yep.
The GM is the top hockey or is the top football operations person with the Bears. It'll be the top hockey operations person for the Hawks. Does that sort of eliminate some of the higher, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, does that eliminate like an Eddie Olczyk type? Is just
it certainly sounds like it's a may.
Right. Like is being just a general manager enough for Eddie O to leave?
I guess
the
theoretically
booth?
You're still effectively a president of hockey operations. You just don't have that specific title necessarily.
Well, I mean, and look, that's what Stan Bowman was, right? Like he was the was he vice president of hockey, whatever it was. Whatever his title was, he was the hockey czar and the GM at the same time. They might just be streamlining the title. And yeah. Al McIsaac was there and Norm McIver was there. There were all these people who were there assisting the GM. He often didn't listen to them, as we found out. but I don't know. I am interested. I definitely was expecting, if you were to ask me 24 hours ago, okay, this release is coming out tomorrow, what's it going to say? I definitely would have said, hockey ops guy, GM, and then fill in below that.
Yep.
So I don't really have a thought like good or bad about this because I want to see how it shakes out. Really interested to find out who they're going to talk to, especially as they sort of hinted at the possibility that it might not be someone who is from the world of hockey.
That, you see, and that's exactly why I'm curious. Like, why would you not then have a dual kind of structure then where the president of hockey operations may have experience in another sport or whatever, and then have a GM beneath that person? And I thought that that would make a lot more sense if they're going to be casting the net outside of the world of hockey. And then to add on top of that, the fact that they've said that Kyle Davidson is a candidate, will interview for that role, and there are reports they want to keep him in the organization, even if they don't hire him as the permanent GM. And I think to myself, why would you make a new GM keep his, I don't want to say predecessor, but you know what I mean. Like, you want that GM to have the autonomy to hire whoever they want. Is that going to be kind of a sticking point that's going to keep some people from taking this job? But they, not to say that Kyle Davidson isn't qualified for it. I think that, you know, the fact that they're considering him for GM indicates that they think he's qualified for it. I'm saying that, don't you want them to have complete autonomy in those types of hiring decisions? And do you think that's going to limit the number of people who are going to be interested in that job?
Of course I want the new GM to have that autonomy. I don't think the Hawks are going to say, we have found the perfect person and we're going to force that person to keep Kyle Davidson. They might strongly suggest or nudge and say, hey, by the way, we've been really impressed with what Kyle Davidson's done here. And I can't, like, realistically, I can't imagine a GM coming into the organization, everyone in the organization singing the praises of someone and then being like, no, this person's gone. You know what I mean? Like, it's just realistically, like, I think as fans, we sometimes think of it that way. Like, I'm bringing all my own people. It's very normal for layovers to stick around and hang out because, look, they've been in the organization. They know how it works. Those people are really valuable to a new general manager coming in and say, hey, like, how do things work around here? You know, what have you observed? When you were interim GM, what were some of the challenges you faced? What are some of the tools you wished you had? Like, all those things are very valuable. And look, Kyle Davidson doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to, like, revolt if he doesn't get the job. He had no expectations of having this job until the scandal broke. And he was suddenly thrust into the interim seat. I don't think it's going to be, long story short, what I'm saying is I don't think it's going to be make or break. The Hawks aren't going to say, hey, Kevin Weeks, or hey, Eddie Olczyk, we want you to be our GM, but only if you keep Kyle Davidson. I just don't think on either side of that, it's going to be a true issue.
Yeah, you're probably right. I thought I had seen a report that Davidson was, they were going to kind of encourage the new person, whoever it is, if it's not Davidson, to keep him around. Yeah. I'm not finding that. Frank Saravalli did say that he thinks that Davidson is a very strong candidate to remain in the position. So it's interesting that they, I mean, of course they're going to say that he's going to be a candidate. I mean, why wouldn't he be? He still has full autonomy to make decisions right now. I think it makes total sense to interview him. They're clearly very high on him. I'm just saying that if they're going to be applying some pressure, why would you agree to join the front office if that's the case? You should be able to hire your own people. And again, not to say Davidson's not qualified, but that wouldn't qualify as keeping my own people if I'm being urged to keep that guy.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. The other thing that's interesting to me is this whole town hall concept.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating.
Because the last time that happened, it did not go well. That was the Mike Smith and Alpo Suhonen town hall hosted by Mike North. That was freaking nuts. I was there. Alpo Suhonen, I think, was falling asleep at the table. Mike Smith, who in hindsight was a pretty damn good GM and did some really good things for the Hawks, is just not the most, like, mic ready and camera ready dude in the world. He's kind of a savant, like, kind of a artsy fartsy, kind of a, you know, he's an eccentric. So Mike North interviewing a guy from Finland and Mike Smith was probably the worst mix you could have had. It just went horribly. So I'm interested to see what the format of this is going to be, what kind of access the average fan is going to have to the town hall. Like, is it for season ticket holders only? Is it for elite season ticket holders? Will it be live streamed? Who knows? Really looking forward to the details on that.
Well, I mean, if staff and media are going to be able to participate in this, there's going to be a decent amount of attention paid to it, and I'm sure it's going to be available in some capacity. Just the fact they're willing to do that, I think, speaks not only to the idea that they want to be, you know, transparent about what the expectations are of that GM, but it sounds like it, when they say the greater vision of the Chicago Blackhawks, what do you think that means?
I think
that doesn't sound like just hockey to me.
No, it sounds like, look, it sounds like Danny realizes that the Hawks, despite their massive jump in organizational structure from when John McDonough took over till now, they're still way behind the times in terms of modern sports franchises. in terms of like the size of the staff of the, of when I say the office, I don't mean hockey ops or I just mean in general, right? Like
right.
There's a lot that probably needs to be done. I think the failure of the Kyle Beach situation from top to bottom is sort of a very strong indicator of that, that HR was kind of like non-existent. You know, if you had a problem with John McDonough, too bad, suck it up. There's not like an actual. So I think that sort of a thing, like ground up rebuilding of the, of, you know, Chicago Blackhawks Incorporated or LLC or whatever it is, you know, that's what needs to happen. It's more than just we need a person to make hockey decisions. I think what they're planning on doing, and we'll get more insight on this, obviously, in the town hall, they need to sort of revamp the way the entire organization operates. Not that it's bad, but it's just as behind the times.
Well, I mean, and if you involve Danny Wirtz and Jamie Faulkner in that town hall, I'm assuming that we're going to hear a lot about what the non-hockey portion of the organization is going to do, whether it's a, I wouldn't imagine a huge scale restructuring, but you could probably see them making announcements about how they're going to engage with the community, how they're going to handle things similar to the Kyle Beach situation in the future. If something, you know, ever happens again that, you know, requires lawyers or whatever else, there will be undoubtedly better procedures put in place. I'm sure the Blackhawks will announce partnerships with sexual assault, you know, advocacy groups, what have you. I'm sure that all of those things are probably going to be focused on if there's going to be a town hall involving fans and staff and media. I would think that this isn't just going to be, oh, we're going to rebuild. This is probably, yeah, we're going to rebuild hockey, but there's a lot of other stuff that we're looking to take care of too. So I think that between the idea that it's just going to be a GM and not a president of hockey ops and the fact that they're willing to do this town hall, I think those are probably the two most intriguing takeaways from all of this. And I'm really interested to see just how long it's going to take them to start to identify candidates and to get somebody permanently hired into that position. You don't want to do this like March 16th and then have like the trade deadline be 5 days away. I would imagine that they'll try to get somebody installed sooner rather than later.
I would definitely think that's the case. And one more thing I want to bring up with this. A lot of people have sort of said, like, well, why does Jamie Faulkner have insight into the hire? She's on the business ops side, and a lot of people are drawing that parallel to Ted Phillips. Here's the thing. The fact that Ted Phillips, someone in his role, is in a decision-making or like an input position, to me isn't bad. It's that Ted Phillips specifically sucks at it, right? Like, he himself is bad at the job. I think that if you have someone in that role and you're going to make a franchise-altering hire, you want all of the minds of the company in on that decision. And yes, ultimately it falls on Danny Wirtz, and ultimately it will fall on George McCaskey to hire a GM. And hopefully the GM hires the coach he wants. And I hope the same thing happens with the Hawks, right? But having your business operations person in there for interviews and talking to the candidates and asking questions that maybe Danny didn't think of, those are good things. Jamie Faulkner is a very intelligent woman who knows what she's doing, has earned this job. I want to hear a little more from her. I wish she was a little more out front and talking.
I was
going
to say, I'd love to have her on the podcast. Would love it.
I wonder if now that the smoke is sort of cleared on the Kyle Beach thing, if they'd be a little more open to that. You know, because last year dealing with a pandemic, there wasn't a ton of business ops stuff to talk about. But I wonder if now that we're sort of entering this new era, air quotes, that they announced today, I wonder if she'll make herself available. Because I would absolutely, I know some Hawks brass listens to this podcast, open invitation for Jamie Faulkner. Anytime she wants to come on, we'd love to talk to her. Same thing goes for Danny, of course. Same thing goes for Kyle Davidson. Whoever you want to put on here, we're happy to have them. That's an open invite, though. I'd love to talk to Jamie Faulkner and just find out, you know, what is her, year and a half or whatever it's been like? What has she been doing? What is her focus every day? I think it's fascinating. So, look, man, I'm on board. I'm really fascinated to see what's going to happen next with the Blackhawks. We should have some answers. Well, we'll definitely have a few next week when this town hall happens. And then hopefully in short order, a new GM and the next era of Blackhawks hockey will be set to begin. And I, for one, am ready.
loved everything that you said, man. And I am very curious to see how this all plays out. And hey, it gives us something to talk about other than the outrageousness of what's happening on the ice for this team. I can't wait.
Definitely. All right, man. Thanks for taking time out of your night, James. I know you're doing some work. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We greatly appreciate it. We're never far away. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. Until then, take care of yourselves. Be well. We'll talk to you next time.
The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast was brought to you by Fry the Coop, Triple Threat Sports, and by the Since In-Law Group.